It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 265 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. This week you're in for a real treat as I talk with terrific comics professional Ron Mars. Known for doing many good things in comics, including Green Lantern, Silver Surfer, he's working with Ominous Press these days, and that includes Bart Sears, and they're creating wonderful material that I'm sure you'd like to read. We discuss how that came to be, as well as other projects he's working on, and other creator-owned things that he's produced. So he's got a lot of good things to talk about, and I'm sure you're going to enjoy what he has to say. There's a lot to get to, so let's get on with the show. It's an honor to talk to Ron Mars, comics creator of so many good stories over the years, and somebody who's working now with Ominous Press. We want to get to that in just a couple of minutes. How are you doing today, Ron?
I'm good, Wayne. Thanks for having me.
I was saying before we started to record that the word prolific is a word I would use for your stuff, because, man, you write... I mean, I was looking over the list, and it's got Green Lantern and Batman and Silver Surfer and all kinds of other good things in there. And I was looking at one book I mentioned to you real briefly called Silver Scorpion, which I'd never seen before. Do you want to start off by talking about that? Because I was really fascinated by that one.
Sure. Silver Scorpion was a gig that came my way through Liquid Comics, which was the successor to Virgin Comics, which I did some writing and editing for. And I've done stuff for Liquid now and again over the years, and actually am doing some things right now. But Silver Scorpion was a book that was put together with the Clinton Foundation and the Syrian government. Obviously, a number of years ago now, the situation in Syria has obviously deteriorated drastically. But it was kind of an outreach project to get into the hands of kids in the Middle East and in Syria in particular, to try to get them to read and to try to build some bridges between communities. I did the first issue. There were a couple issues after that. But obviously, once you do something like this, it's floating around out there forever. I think it was even a Free Comic Book Day book a couple of years ago. And it was definitely a take on a Middle Eastern Muslim superhero that hopefully got into the hands of the right people.
Well, let's hope, because it was really an interesting thing, because apparently you can download it now at Amazon.com for free, and it goes on your Kindle. When we get done here, I'm going to be reading that, because I really am fascinated by it. One of the things that's also interesting about this character is that he's lost his legs in the whole business.
Yeah, it was inspired to a great extent, and this was the gig going into it, because of the violence left over in that part of the country, and in particular landmines left over in that part of the country or in that part of the world. So they wanted us to deal with a character who had become disabled because of coming across a landmine. And certainly it's a superhero story. It's a fantasy story in that it certainly departs from the real world, but they wanted to have enough real world aspects to it that we were being true to the region, we were being true to the people, and not trying to downplay the struggles that are inherent in that part of the world.
Well, it's just an amazing thing. Again, it just shows what I think is a diversity in your writing. You can write about just about anything. But I did notice you tend to do more galactic type thing, epic big stories. You know, Green Lantern, of course, Silver Surfer, those are galactic being things. You've done, like, Infinity Gauntlet, you've written some stuff. A lot of your characters tend to be larger than life characters, which, of course, I think that's comics is the perfect medium for. I think that's the way to do it. And so was that a conscious thing? Do you prefer that? Because I've seen you've done other... You know, you did Batman, of course, my favorite character. And you've done all kinds of stuff. Is there one kind of character that you prefer to write for? Or do you kind of like to stretch your writing muscles all over the place?
Yeah, there's really nothing in particular that I would rather do you know, early in my career, I guess I got a little typecast as the Cosmic guy because I started off on Silver Surfer and then went to Green Lantern. And I didn't have any more particular interest in that sort of material than more street-level stuff like Batman or Daredevil or fantasy or crime drama or anything like that. Mm-hmm. It was just those were what were in front of me. Mm-hmm. So that's what I did. I mean, overall, I would rather stretch as many different muscles as possible, which is, I guess, one of the reasons why I've sought out to do as many different things as possible, because I don't want to just do the same thing. I always liken it to, I love pizza, but I don't want to eat it for every meal. I'd rather have a variety of stuff in front of me. That way, if I get bored doing the job, it's my fault. It's not the material, and it's not the fact that I'm just doing too much of one thing. For me, it's much more preferable to be able to stretch different muscles and to be able to tell different kinds of stories. I don't, you know, and that extends to different genres as well. It's not like I became a storyteller because I just wanted to tell superhero stories. I became a storyteller because I wanted to tell stories, and superheroes are just one tray on the smorgasbord table.
Because you've written Star Wars stories. You know, Heavenly Days, you know, there's so many different kinds of things that you've done. It's just amazing to me. One of the things I've also noted about your writing is that you're comfortable telling good stories within the framework of, say, a franchise like Star Wars, things like that. And, of course, Batman, all the ones you've mentioned before, these are all franchises. And you've been pretty good at coming up with things that people haven't thought of previously to you, and then you take the franchise where it hasn't gone before to be sort of a Star Trek thing. Because not many people are good at that like you are. So I find that to be a real interesting thing, because you have done your own characters and have done your own stories and things. But as far as like working within a franchise, not everybody can comfortably go from franchise to franchise and tell unique stories in there. Was that something that came naturally to you? Did you develop that? How did you get to be comfortable like that?
It's just part of the gig, especially working with big two superheroes or working in a expanded universe like Star Wars. You know that you're playing with other people's toys, and you have to respect the parameters that they give you to play with those toys. Mm-hmm. And you know, and the other side of that equation is that these are really cool toys to get to play with. So it's not like you really feel like, oh, my hands are tied, I can't do what I want. Mm-hmm. You can't go into the gig thinking that way. Mm-hmm. If you do, you're just naive. That's not the way this works. And I think because I started my career at Marvel, I mean, the first thing I ever wrote was a Silver Surfer script that was printed by Marvel, and that's where my career started. So I didn't get to flex my muscles anywhere else. I started at the big two. So my earliest experiences in my career were dealing with shared universes and shared characters. And for me in particular, you know, like the first year of my career, I was doing Infinity Gauntlet tie-ins on Silver Surfer. And that was a great training ground for learning how to play well with others and learning how to tell stories in and around other stories, which is part and parcel of a shared universe. And also very much in that shared universe, you're dealing with other characters, other editors, other writers' stories. So you try to stake out your own territory, but not step on anybody else's toes while you're doing it. So I think in a lot of ways, that was the best possible training ground I could have early in my career, because I got to learn how all that worked. I didn't come at it from the standpoint of, you know, having done my own work and done my own creator-owned stuff, and then come into a shared universe and then learning the lessons of, oh, I don't get to just do completely what I want to do like you do for creator-owned work. It's much more a team effort. And honestly, from when I started in the business to the way the business works now, it's even more of a team effort, and it's even more editorially coordinated. So if you don't work well with others, and if you can't sublimate or at least round the edges off what you want to do for your story so that you can fit in with the rest of the universe, Big Two Superhero Comics is not the place for you.
Oh, wow, yeah. That's probably really true more than ever, because there seems to be, it used to be like somebody would give a script to somebody and your job was to basically translate it. But now it feels like there's a lot of give and take between the creators, both the writer and the artist, because some artists are also writers and some writers are also artists. So there's this quite a bit of change in that. But
Comics are certainly a truly collaborative when you have a separate writer and artist. obviously some guys write and draw their own stuff, and that's very much a singular vision. But when you're collaborating with an artist, which is what I've always done because I can't draw to save my life, there's, you know, there's give and take, and there's I think the magic of comics is really in that space where the writer and artist meet, and you get the best ideas out of both aspects of the story, and hopefully you end up creating something that's bigger and better than either of you could have come up with on your own. Mm-hmm. To me, that's kind of the, when a comic works and all of the pieces are clicking, it's like a basketball team or a jazz quartet or quintet, mm-hmm. where everybody's kind of doing their own thing, but you end up with all of those pieces coming together to form a greater whole.
Mm-hmm. Which is cool. That's a great way to do it. Kind of the creative process lends itself that way when it's working the best, I think. But you mentioned a little bit about your own creator-owned properties. Do you want to talk a little bit about those? Because most people probably know you for Green Lantern and for the other stuff you've done for Star Wars, things like that. What creator-owned things have you done that we should be aware of?
Let's see. I did a series at Dark Horse called Samurai Heaven and Earth, which is a historical samurai epic that follows a samurai from 1705 Japan across Europe and then into the Middle East. There's two volumes of that out, although I think the first one might have just gone out of print. I have a book called Shinku at Image, which, again, has a samurai theme to it, but it's a modern-day samurai hunting vampires in contemporary Japan. And we've got the first trade of that out, and there are actually more issues in the can, but we've sort of, last few years, the skids have come off the deadlines, and at some point we'll get back to it. And I've done a book called Dragon Prince at Top Cow, another graphic novel series called Ravine with Stjepan Sejic at Top Cow. So I always feel like a writer is blessed in this business because you can do your creator-owned stuff in addition to the work-for-hire stuff, the company-owned stuff, that is often what pays the bills. Artists are often not in that position because they can basically do one book a month. So you sort of have to pick the one that you want to work on. And a lot of times that ends up being the work-for-hire stuff because, again, that's what's got the page rate attached to it. Mm-hmm. But I, like virtually any other writer in the business these days, I've got a list of creator-owned concepts and pitches that I want to get to. It's just a matter of finding the time to do it and finding the right artist to draw it. And there will certainly be more as we go, hopefully debuting in 2017. But as a writer, I think you always have a responsibility to make sure you're sort of doing one for you and then one for the people that pay the bills.
So you've got irons in the fire already for future projects that we haven't talked about yet.
Oh, yeah. And again, that's the stuff that doesn't feel like work. That's the stuff that you would almost, well, I was going to say that you would almost do for free. A lot of times you do end up doing it for free, and then you hopefully reap the rewards on the back end. Mm-hmm. But I always feel like doing creator-owned stuff is the way to have a career in comics. Mm-hmm. Just doing work-for-hire stuff is the way to have a job in comics.
Mm. Interesting. Well, that's a good way to put it. That's interesting. All right, let's dive into Ominous Press, because you're working with Bart Sears quite a lot there, one of my very favorite artists of all time. I remember seeing him on Justice League Europe, I think it was, when I saw him. And I was just so impressed by his art style, very dynamic, very powerful. And as I was looking through the things you've done, you've actually worked with him several times. You worked with him on Exo Manowar, from what I saw. There were a couple other projects that I noticed that you guys had worked on. That Path, The Crisis of Faith, you guys had worked together on that. So obviously you guys have been friends a long time. How did Ominous Press grow out of that process? Did you guys work together?
Well, Bart and I have been friends for more than 20 years at this point, I think. We've known each other forever and have worked together on, as you said, on a number of occasions here and there. Bart actually came in and did a Silver Surfer issue during my run and was going to take over the book, but then deadline complications sort of made that whole thing sputter out after one issue. But Bart's one issue of Silver Surfer is still one of my favorite issues of my run. And then Bart came down to CrossGen in the early part of this century, and we did a book called The Path together, which was a sort of a fantasy samurai epic. Mm-hmm. And we've done various odds and ends together over the years. Whenever, you know, the stars aligned, we also did a book called The Protectors for Athleta Comics, which is a company founded by Israel Adonijay, who is a former NFL player, played a decade for the Chicago Bears, and is still based in Chicago. And I ended up being hooked up with Izzy through a mutual friend, and then I brought Bart into that project. So we did a 5-issue, or actually a 6-issue series for the Protectors, and took Israel's ideas for this superhero team and turned it into, you know, he said, here, these are my ideas. This is sort of my Bible for the series. Can we turn this into a comic? And he just turned Bart and I loose to do what we do. And the trade paperback of that is now complete, and Athleta self-published it. It's available on Amazon. And again, it's called The Protectors, and it's actually one of my favorite projects because we were just allowed to do what we do. And that's kind of one of the greatest gifts in comics is to, you know, the people that you're working for to just trust that you know what you're doing and let you do your job. So that was the most recent thing that Bart and I teamed up on. And then Ominous Press, which was a concern back in the 90s. It was Bart's publishing company in the 90s for a couple of years, mm-hmm. in the mid-90s. Mm-hmm. And Ominous Press put out a few books, Bart's characters and sort of a universe created by Bart, put out a few books. And then in the mid-90s, when the market crashed, it took a lot of small press publishers with them, and Ominous was one of those.
Mm-hmm. So why do you bring it back?
I should say that I didn't actually do anything for Ominous in the 90s. I was friends with Bart and Andy Smith, who was the art director, and a number of other guys that were in that group. Mm-hmm. But just as I was getting ready to do some work for it, the market crashed and the whole thing kind of got shuttered. So now here we are 20 years later, mm-hmm. and Ominous is reality again, because Bart Sears and Andy Smith and I happened to be at Baltimore Convention a year and a half ago. Mm. And that was the first time in a number of years that all of us had been together. And then a friend of ours named Sean Husbar from Buffalo, who was also part of Ominous back in the 90s, saw that the three of us were going to be there, and he flew down Sunday morning to hang out with us because we hadn't all been together. We figured out the four of us had not been in the same room together since Andy Smith's wedding, which was 20 years ago.
Wow.
So it was kind of a reunion more than anything else. But as we got hanging around and talking about the old days and what everybody was doing now, the notion of, well, maybe we should try to restart Ominous and finish what we started, but also point in the direction of having an ongoing publishing concern. So from that happenstance day, the refounding of Ominous Press resulted. And so Art's the chief creative officer. I'm the editor in chief. Mm-hmm. Andy's the art director. Mm-hmm. And Sean is the publisher. So between the four of us, we are the company. Mm-hmm. And of course, we've hired other people to do freelance work for us. But we're setting the course for the company and putting our plans in place so that we can officially launch later this summer.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have to say, I was at C2E2 like a year ago, and you guys had put out this preview book. And unfortunately, I didn't see it there. It was like a couple months later, I was going through, somebody had sent me emails. And amongst the stuff I was looking at was this preview book, which I could download and take a look at. And I said, well, gee, I got to see this. So I downloaded it and I read it, and I was so impressed. By, you know, you guys had like three books that you were promoting, and you only had a few pages from each book. But by the time I got through the pages of each book, I was like hooked. I was going like, holy smoke, when are the rest of these coming out? And I wrote a review on Major Spoilers where I write my stuff. And I said, this is one of the best things I've ever seen as far as preview of things. And I wanted to see more from you guys. And so when I started to see more generating, I was real happy about that. Talk a little bit about that preview book, because honestly, I've heard nothing but good things about it. When you guys made that decision to go with that, and you generated the artwork to go in that book, you guys must have been pretty happy with it, because everybody that I've ever talked to who's read it really just talked about how terrific it is.
Well, thanks, Wayne. It's really meant as an appetizer, just to give everybody a little flavor of what each of the series is going to be like and what the overall thrust of the story is going to be like. So we put together those short stories with, you know, with some background material and some universe explanation, and just kind of a sampler pack of what the stories are going to be. So the three stories are Giant Killer, which will be written and drawn by Bart, and I'll be editing that one, which means I'll tell Bart he's got too many balloons on the page and he's got to cut some of them, and then we'll argue about it. So Giant Killer is really Bart's baby, and that's sort of the central book in the universe. All the books are separate and individual, but if you read all three of them, you'll get a bigger picture. You'll get to see how the tapestry all connects.
Mm-hmm.
So Giant Killers is sort of fantasy science fiction with a hero who has walked away from being a hero and must gather up his sword again in order to protect a girl who holds the key to overthrowing Lord Omen, who was the big villain of our universe. That's our emperor. That's our Sauron.
Mm-hmm.
So Giant Killers will be more than likely the first one out. Then I'm writing a book called Prometheus.
Mm-hmm.
Tom Ranney is drawing. Mm-hmm. And Tom is also a guy I've known for years. And we've worked together on, we've also done a Silver Surfer issue together and a number of projects here, there, and everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
The book I'm doing with Tom is about a post-apocalyptic world, maybe a little bit like Mad Max, if the ultra-rich and ultra-wealthy people aren't out in the wastelands and actually have a fairly lovely experience, but the rest of the population is struggling out in the wastelands and is kept docile by this seemingly fantasy video game entertainment, this immersive experience that everybody plugs into every day that presents these larger-than-life godlike characters, which are named after the Greek gods of old.
Mm-hmm.
That's the setup for the story. The story itself is about what happens when those godlike characters wake up to the fact that the world they think they're in doesn't exist, and they wake up in the real world to find out they're not gods, they're actually monsters.
Mm-hmm.
When we started talking about the series, Tom was the first guy and the last guy that I thought of. I just felt like what the world was going to look like, what the technology was going to look like, the characters were all right up Tom's alley. And turns out he was absolutely the right guy. I called and said, here, we're doing this thing. You want to join up? And Tom said, yeah, I'm in. And the pages he's producing are just spectacular.
Yeah.
It's sort of maybe a little bit like Mad Max meets The Matrix meets Clash of Titans. It's a really immersive world that we're trying to create, and I couldn't be more happy with it. And then the last book is called Demigod, which I'm writing and Andy Smith is drawing.
Mm-hmm.
And the short version of that one is, what if Deadpool wound up with the power of Thor? it's kind of this guy who ends up inheriting this immense power, but he didn't get the Spider-Man meme. He didn't get with great power comes great responsibility. He just got the great power part.
Mm-hmm.
So he's kind of an ass. he's probably like what most people would be if they ended up with vast superhero power.
Mm-hmm.
But he will come to find out that doing that has a fairly serious price tag as well.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a big superheroic over-the-top story, but it's also got humor to it. It's got some fourth wall breaking to it.
Mm-hmm.
And again, this takes advantage of the stuff that Andy does the best on the page. It's over-the-top action, but it's also pretty funny. It's just the sort of series that seems to be striking a chord right now with the audience, where the characters don't take themselves as seriously as traditional superheroes have always done.
Mm-hmm. Which I loved. I loved all three of them. The last one made me smile the most, though, I have to say. I was just, because he's so what you expect in the real world. If somebody got powers, this is what they would likely turn into, which I like.
Well, you know, he's our hero, but he's kind of a selfish jerk.
Mm-hmm.
So trying to balance those two qualities has actually been a lot of fun for me to write, because it's probably the most face value funny thing that I've ever written. There's not a lot of comedy in comics in general, but I think it's starting to be more accepted by the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So that's allowing me to stretch some different muscles than I have traditionally. So again, all of the books are different. All of the books have a different personality, but there are some threads that connect them. And obviously, we're hoping the audience will read all of them, but you're not going to be forced to read all of them. This isn't a 57-part crossover where you have to get every issue.
Okay, that's a good thing. Like that a lot. Now, are they going to come out individual issues? Are you going to trade them? How are you going to put these books out?
There'll be individual monthly issues. When we start shipping, the books will be monthly. And as I said, we expect to start later this year, more than likely in the summer, and we are partnering with a publisher to be putting our books into the direct market.
Mm.
And actually, the contracts are almost signed, the ink is almost dry, so we know who we're going with. Everything's one big happy family, but I can't tell you who we're going with
because
it's not completely signed off yet. But I can say that it's the publisher that we were the most interested in, and the one that definitely felt like the best fit. And so far, it's been a really terrific relationship, and the publisher has been very supportive of what we want to do, and we're very happy to be where we are. And as soon as I can tell you, we'll actually announce it to the whole world.
Now, of course, you brought up a subject I was going to get to later, but let's do it now since you talked about it. How do we keep up with the things you guys are doing at Ominous Press? You've got a website, ominouspress.com.
Ominouspress.com is more of a placeholder than anything else right now, but we're actually working on content for it right now. Mm-hmm. And that will be a fairly robust website as we get closer to launch. There's a Facebook page, there's a Twitter account, there's an Instagram account, all Ominous Press. So all you need to do is search Ominous Press and you'll come up with all those accounts. Facebook and Twitter are probably the most immediate up-to-date places, but the ominouspress.com website will have, in fact, today I was working on specific content that's going to be just for the website. So I want to make sure that we give people a reason to show up to the website on a fairly regular basis.
And I wanted to mention, too, that if you go to ominouspress.com, you can get that book that we were talking about previously. It's called World Premiere Number 1. It sells for $1.99, but if you want to get the signed edition, it's $19.95. And so, that, of course, you guys, your time is valuable, so that's why it's $19.95 for that. There's also a phrase on there that I really like. It's three words with a period after each one describing what appears to be the Ominous Press philosophy. It starts out with the word relentless, second word is powerful, and the third word is comics. I really like that because, you know, a lot of mission statements from a lot of comics companies are like verbose for page after page they're going about it. But in three words, it feels like you've described what you guys are hoping to accomplish at Ominous Press.
I think Bart and Andy and I and Tom too, Sean as well, we all have the same basic background in comics, which is we all sort of grew up on, the comics of the 70s and 80s. And I think to great extent, we're trying to capture not the storytelling or or any specifics from those eras, but just the feel that we got when we were kids or teenagers discovering comics. And the thing we always talk about is that we want to capture that feeling of getting to the end of your comic that month and just feeling like, oh, I can't wait 30 days for the next one to come out. How am I ever going to survive this? Mm-hmm. So we want to be able to give people that feeling when they get to the end of any Ominous issue. So these books aren't going to be terribly decompressed. We're going to pack as much story as we can into them, and we will ship on time to make sure that you don't have to wait more than 30 days to get your next fix.
Mm-hmm. Great, great. Well, looking forward to it. I saw Bart at a booth in Baltimore Comic Con. I always tell people a lot goes on behind the scenes at these conventions, and the story you told earlier about the creation of Ominous Press, the revival of it, happens there. So many stories happens out of the cons. And I saw Bart at, I think it was Baltimore Comic Con, and he was selling two books that I picked up called Legendary. And, of course, you wrote the framing sequences in there. Do you want to talk about what Legendary is?
We started this, it's basically a miniseries called Ominous Press Legendary, and each issue reprints the old Ominous Press material.
Ah.
Stuff from the 90s, which, there were a handful of books that came out and a few other products. So we wanted to bring that material back and get it in front of people again, since we had it and we had access to it. But I was the one who said, look, these are old comics, and to a certain extent, they read like old comics. Mm-hmm. They look like old comics because of the coloring technology that was available at that time. And that's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not like we're ashamed of what the old stuff looked like. But I said, I felt like we needed to give it some context, and we needed to bring those stories into this century. Mm-hmm. So each of the Legendary issues has a framing sequence by me and Tom Ranney that is kind of a framework around the old stories to give you some sense of how those old stories fit and also update what's going on in the universe right now. So we actually have three issues of Legendary out.
Mm.
The third one, which, let me see, I should have I should have the third one sitting on my desk.
I think I'm getting ready. I think I'm ordering. It's called Male's Rage. M-A-E-L.
Male's Rage, yeah.
Yeah, I'm getting ready to order that one.
That was the last bit of old Ominous material that we had. So Male's Rage is the third one. There's a reprint story in there from the 90s. There's also a story that never saw print that was penciled back then, but has been colored now. It's kind of an artifact that is just seeing the light of day for the first time. So that brings the story along a little further, and we're just putting the finishing touches on Legendary number 4, which is the death of Pharos. That will tie off all of the old storylines from the original Ominous Press days, because we felt the responsibility to go back and give some closure to those stories that were initially told back then. Mm-hmm. So the death of Pharos is Legendary number 4. So Legendary number 4 is completely new material. Every page of it is actually being produced now. This is a story that was meant to be told back then, but it was never drawn. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of interesting for Bard in particular, because he's drawing the main story, to go back and revisit stuff that he did 20 years ago, but now he's obviously drawing it and writing it with eyes that are 20 years beyond where he was at that point. Mm-hmm. So this sort of completes the Legendary miniseries and completes our quote-unquote reprint series. Mm-hmm. But the fourth issue is completely new material. This is stuff that didn't exist before. We just started working on it mm-hmm. within the last few months. Mm-hmm. So we should be sending that off to press by the end of the month. So that'll be available on the website and at convention appearances probably by mid to late February.
Mm-hmm. Talk to me while you're mentioning convention appearances, because I noticed that you seem to be sharing. Sometimes you guys go together, sometimes you're separate. It just depends on how it seems to work out for the convention for you guys. Do you guys have plans to do more convention appearances in 2017? What kind of things do you have in store for the fans if they go to cons to go see you guys?
Yeah, we'll definitely be doing more. The Ominous Press booth will be set up at the, I believe it's called the North Texas Comic Fest, at the end of January in Dallas. Mm-hmm. That's not one I'm attending, mm-hmm. but Tom Ranney, Andy Smith, and Bart Sears will be there. Mm-hmm. And they'll have all of the books and posters and refrigerator magnets and all sorts of cool stuff for you to take home. So we're now in the process of kind of figuring out our convention schedule for at least a bulk of the year. And we did quite a few appearances, usually with all four of us, usually creatively me, Andy, and Tom together. Mm-hmm. And then Sean Husvar, our publisher, is with us as well. Mm-hmm. We did quite a few appearances together last year. We did South Carolina Comic Con. We did San Diego. Let's see, Baltimore, New Jersey Comic Expo. So we did a fair number together. I think this year we're going to be doing a decent number of shows all together, but we're also going to be splitting it up a little bit, because certainly we found that when you're a small company and the entire company goes to a show, nothing gets done. So in terms of actually producing the comics, a show takes a pretty good chunk out of your week. You usually have a travel day on either end, and then, God forbid, you pick up a cold at the show or your plane gets delayed. It can wreak havoc with your schedule. So let me see that. Like I said, those guys are going to be in Dallas this month. Bart and I are going to be at Emerald City Con in Seattle, the beginning of March.
Wow.
And we're all going to be at South Carolina Con in Greenville, South Carolina, in the end of March. And then we're still booking our cons for the rest of the year. But it's been a very nice reception for Ominous in general, that shows have been knocking on the door seeing if we want to set up at their convention. And it's, like I said, you have to balance the, hey, it's flattering and it's fun to go somewhere, but also somebody's got to stay behind and mind the shop.
Mm-hmm. That's cool. Well, that's great that the word's already getting out and people are already knowing what you're doing and are trying to help you get the word out, which is really cool, because the cons will do that for you. You know, I always tell people, if you want to sell a book or want to get something going, oftentimes go to cons, because those people will spread out into the community and take good word with them about your product, you know, if they particularly like it. So,
yeah, I mean, certainly word of mouth is the best tool that you have in comics still. Certainly you want to reach as many people as possible, but having that personal relationship with somebody that comes up to the booth at a show and you hopefully send them away a happy customer. Mm-hmm. There's no substitute for that. Mm-hmm. And it's good for us as creators to be able to get out when we can and interact with the audience, because ultimately our job is to sit in a room by ourselves and create the material. Mm-hmm. So for the most part, unless somebody's in a studio situation somewhere, for the most part, we're just flying solo, writing, drawing, whatever it is. So you go from being alone in a room for 8 or 10 or 12 hours a day to being in the middle of a convention that's got 30,000 people. It's sort of both ends of the spectrum. Mm-hmm. It can be a little bit of whiplash as you go back and forth between the two, mm-hmm. but it's the nature of the beast, and it's really a necessity in the business if you want to reach the audience.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think you guys are doing a terrific job, and I can't wait to see more from Ominous Press. But now I want to ask you about, because I'm sure you're good stuff working with Ominous Press, what about other projects that you're going? Now, you mentioned some of them you can't talk about. Are there ones that you can that we should be aware of?
Like I said, as with any writer, there's always multiple irons in the fire, and mm-hmm. and I realized the other day that half the stuff I'm working on, or maybe even more than half, is stuff that I really can't talk about yet because it's not announced. And mm-hmm. you know, the publishers appreciate it when you step on their toes with for press releases. Right, so right. So I can say I'm juggling a number of different things, mm-hmm. some projects for India, mm-hmm. some projects for the US market. Mm-hmm. I am doing a book with Daryl Banks, who is my Green Lantern compatriot.
Right.
And a guy I worked with virtually every day for 7 years. So it's almost like you're getting back together with your ex. I'm doing a book for a publisher called Van Breed Productions. And it's a World War II story. So Daryl and I are doing sort of a World War II commando story, mm-hmm. which is not the closest thing to Green Lantern, but we're having a ball doing it. And mm-hmm. we're doing pages as we can. And hopefully we'll place that somewhere or just self-publish. And I'm having a ball working on a book with Daryl again, because we haven't really done much together since Green Lantern. And he was always one of my favorite guys to work with. And now being able to do it again is just a sheer pleasure.
That's cool. What about you? I mean, if we want to, of course, we want to follow Ominous Press. If we want to keep up with what you're up to, our Facebook, what's the best way to follow what you're up to?
I'm actually not on Facebook. That's the thing that I've resisted all this time, because I just felt like it was going to be too much of a distraction and too big of a time consumer. So the best place to find me is on Twitter, mm-hmm. where it's just at Ron Mars, which will obviously update regularly with what I'm doing. I also have ronmars.com, which has not been updated in a while, but one of my 2017 resolutions is to get back to doing that on a regular basis, mm-hmm. and having more content, and maybe even doing a Patreon aspect to it, so that there'll be some content that, if you want to pony up a few bucks a month, we'll do the kind of stuff that I was doing at CBR with my Shelf Life column, mm-hmm. which obviously is no more because CBR isn't really doing columns anymore. Mm-hmm. But I still kind of have the yen to do that sort of writing. So I wondered if I should take the column someplace else, and had a few offers. But I thought, well, maybe I should just do it myself, and whoever wants it can get it. Mm-hmm. So within the next few months, hopefully we'll get started on that too.
Very cool. Now, of course, social media is a double-edged sword. You could be spending that time doing creative stuff and hopefully making money off of it. But on the other hand, it gets the word out so people can buy what you've already been working on. So that, there's that thing.
Well, it's all part of the package now. Certainly, you know, when I started my career, that level of interaction just did not exist. Maybe you would be asked to go on a message board once in a while or something like that by a publisher. Mm-hmm. But generally, it was not an aspect of the job. Now it's a big part of the job. You know, you have to promote, you have to engage. It's just a necessity. So I think I probably, in terms of the percentage of my time that is spent writing, that's probably a smaller percentage now than when I started my career, just because there are so many other aspects to doing this job that didn't exist then. You just have to find a way to squeeze it all in.
Wow. That's something. Well, I want to wrap it up by, you talked about Izzy from the Bears, and I interviewed him about the Protectors on this podcast a while back, and he just had glowing words to say about you and about Bart and the terrific trade that I actually got to buy and read, which I loved too. I just thought it was a terrific, terrific book, and again, I highly encourage anybody, if you haven't read The Protectors, it's a great book. And he just talked about how great it was. You know, he brought you guys in, and you turned this thing into these wonderful ideas he had into something, you know, even better than he thought it was going to be. So just great stuff. You guys do wonderful work whenever people set you free, so let's hope that they'll keep doing that with you, and you guys will continue to do this stuff with Ominous Press and other places in the future.
Well, it's, you know, like I said before, I want to make sure I stayed occupied enough so I don't have to go get a real job, because I've been spoiled for 25 years. I'd like to keep it that way.
Okay, well, let's hope we can keep that going, and you don't have to get a real job. And so we'll have to keep out and buy your stuff. So if you see Ron at a convention, you see Ominous Press, buy the stuff so they can make more of this good stuff is what we want to see. So, Ron, keep it up, and, you know, you guys at Ominous Press, boy, we hope to see a lot of good stuff from you guys in the future because it's off to a great start.
Thanks, Wayne. I appreciate everything, and we'll keep you updated.
People need dramatic examples to shake them out of apathy, and I can't do that as Bruce Wayne. As a man, I'm flesh and blood. I can be ignored. I can be destroyed, but as a symbol.
Get the latest from the comics universe. News, interviews, previews, and reviews. Listen to the weekly Wayne's Comics Podcast so you can keep reading your comics.
That's a wrap for this episode. Be sure to be back next week when I'll have another interview with a great comics creator. But until then, keep reading your comics.
It's over, Joker.
Over? Why, my dear delusional Dark Knight, it hasn't even begun.